wanted to speak about something that relates to last week's parsha, Parsha Shemini, and also to Pesach. as young children and as we develop into young adults, we grow accustomed to many practices in Avodas Hashem. There's things we do, there's things we don't do. We engage in the things we're supposed to engage in, stay away from the things we're supposed to stay away from. And very often, we end up behaving and staying away from things, whatever, without giving it much thought. And sort of the mindless observance of our youth ends up taking a toll on us as we get older, because as we start to feel perhaps that some of the mitzvos and some of the things we're supposed to stay away from are more burdensome, so that our failure to understand what we're doing makes it challenging to keep up the practices. Because as we get older and we feel more of a resistance, and we fail to understand really why we're doing what we're doing, so sometimes that resistance can overcome our will to keep the mitzvos and do what we're supposed to be doing. So it's commonplace, I think, fairly commonplace, for Rebbeim, for Mashgichim, for Mashbiim, to help us try to connect to mitzvos aseh. We'll try to understand better why we put on tefillin, why we put on tzitzis, why we make kiddush, why we bench. And, you can try before you do those mitzvos, before you put on tefillin in the morning, before you put on your tzitzis in the morning, stop for a split second and think about why you're doing what you're doing. Try to connect to the deeper reason behind the mitzvah. But I think that often, little to no time is devoted to understanding the mitzvahs lo ta'aseh, the negative things, the things we're not allowed to do. We very rarely speak about the reasons behind the lo ta'aseh's. I think part of the reason for that is that the shmira of these lo ta'aseh's is in a certain sense constant. There is no clear moment in time to focus on the purpose of the lo ta'aseh's. It's like before you're fastening the knot on your tefillin shel yad in the morning, think about why you're doing it. Before you start benching after you have a meal, think about why you're about to bench, what that's all about. It's not like that, but it comes out somewhat ironic that the pervasiveness of the lo ta'aseh's prevents us from attempting to effectively connect to their messages. So I wanted to try to discuss a little bit the reasons behind some of the more pervasive lo ta'aseh's, and then perhaps focus more specifically on Pesach and the Yisur of eating chametz, the Yisurim that are associated with chametz on Pesach, and try to have perhaps one approach, I'm sure there's many approaches, one approach to better understand what we're doing on Pesach and to try to connect to the deeper reasons of why the Torah treats chametz in such a severe manner for the week of Pesach. So that the Ramban, in last week's parsha, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel, when the Torah is going through the animals that we're not allowed to eat, so the Ramban says that the reason why the ofos that are prohibited is because all of those ofos are dores, they're predatory birds. The birds that we're not allowed to eat are predatory birds. And the Ramban says that the Torah doesn't want us ingesting animals that are cruel. He says that that's very, very possibly also the reason why the animals that we're not allowed to eat. The mafris parsa and mala geira are simanim of animals that are not predatory. The animals that we're not allowed to eat are predatory animals. They're cruel. They attack other animals. And we don't want to ingest things that have those bad midos, cruelty, ripping apart other animals in order to eat. That will affect us adversely. And the idea that the whole purpose of the Torah, the purpose of the mitzvos, is to refine us, to make us into bigger people, better people, more sensitive people. So Hashem says that to ingest things that are cruel, right? That there's a spiritual reality there that will affect us adversely. That's what the Ramban says. Now the harder part is, and I think this is something that I don't think too many people do, but I think would change our lives if we did it, is that, whenever you come across, or at least once in a while, when you come across a decision, to eat or to not eat something, or there's a hechsher perhaps that's a questionable hechsher, and you're deciding, I'm not gonna eat from that hechsher anymore, I'm not really sure it's a good thing to do, I'm not sure that hechsher is reliable enough for me. So to try not just to relate to it as, okay, a further prohibition, a further restriction on my freedom, but to see it as an embodiment of a movement towards greater refinement in my midos, right? Ingesting things that are usher in the Torah, ingesting animals or birds that you're not supposed to ingest, is going to affect my midos adversely. And the entire purpose of the Torah is to refine me, to be mitzaref me, like we've spoken about on multiple occasions. So yes, it's true, I'm constantly staying away from non-kosher food, I'm making decisions in the supermarket, decisions with regard to restaurants that I go to, decisions with regard to which people's houses I'm willing to eat in, but not to relate to it as just like a further restriction on my ability to move, to decide what to eat, the certain foods that I like that I'm not allowed to eat, or certain restaurants that people talk about that I'm not going to go to, but this to look at that as an opportunity to further refine myself. Because I know that if I'm taking into my body things that the Torah prohibited, it's going to frustrate the overall purpose of the Torah. Similarly, the Isser of Basar B'chalav, Mosavash al-Gadi B'chalev Yimo, right, the source of the Isser of Basar B'chalav, which, you know, in a certain sense, really like affects our lives in such a significant way. You know, because basar and chalav are independently permitted, but they're only prohibited, it's only prohibited to mix them, so it causes a total balagan in our houses. You know, separate dishes, separate sinks, separate dishwashers, everything, the whole balagan, and waiting, and the chazal are nervous that we're going to make mistakes, so you can't eat meat and milk in the same meal, you have to wait a bunch of hours, whatever your minig is, between eating milk and meat. Right, it totally changes your life. This or basar b'chalav completely changes the way that we live our lives from an eating perspective. What's the pshat? What's this iser? Lo sevash al-gdi b'chalev imo? Why the Torah prohibited that? So the Rashbam, different approaches, but the Rashbam in Parashas Mishpatim, when the Torah first introduces Lo sevash al-gdi b'chalev imo, it's three times in the Torah, but in Parashas Mishpatim, the Rashbam says, if you look at what the Torah says, lo sevash al gdi b'chalev imo, right? Don't cook a gdi in its mother's milk. So it's true. We understand the Masorah is all milk and meat is problematic, but the way that the Torah phrased it, the way the Torah wrote it, is you're not supposed to cook a gdi in its mother's milk. The Rashbam says that's a very cruel thing to do, right? To take the meat, right, and the milk that was meant to nurture that gadi, the milk of the mother that was meant to nurture that gadi, to give life to that gadi, to have the gadi grow into a bigger animal, to not only eat the gadi but to cook it in its mother's milk, that's beyond the pale. That's going to lead to a dulling of sensitivities, a dulling of midos. That act is a dulling of sensitivities. Right, the Rashbam compares this to the iser of osov yesbino, not shechting a mother and its child on the same day. The mitzvah of shiluach hakein, sending away the mother bird to take the baby birds. This idea of yes, the Torah allows us to eat meat. The animals were created for us to use. We're allowed to eat them. However, there's a gvul. There's a boundary, right? To cook a gedi, to cook meat in milk. A gedi b'chalev imo, and meat and milk in general, is a dulling of our sensitivities, right? It shows a lack of sensitivity. To take the gedi and cook it in its mother's milk is a complete dulling of sensitivities. And the idea that the Torah puts a gavul, you're allowed to eat animals, you're allowed to partake from them, but also vesbono, shiluach hakein, lo sevash al gdi b'chalev imo, these are all things that Hashem decided would dull our sensitivities, would lead to a frustration of the refinement that the Torah is meant to bring about. So stam, in our the way that we live our lives, right, basar b'chalav becomes part of our practice from such a young age and governs so much of our food decisions and, you know, milk and meat. Okay, I can't have the meat now, then I have to wait 6 hours, it's gonna be a balagan, I'll have, right, all these decisions that we're making all the time, they become so second nature to us, and we never connect to the reason behind it. Why am I doing that? Right? Do we ever think once, you know, with our milchik dishes, fleishik dishes, milchik ovens, fleishik, whatever, all these things, and waiting, gosh, I have to wait another 2 hours to have the ice cream, the chocolate bar, whatever, just when you're making that decision, you're looking at your watch, okay, it's another hour, it's another 2 hours. If, you know, once a week, once a month, you would think to yourself, gosh, this is a further effort on my part, further effort on Hashem's part, to get me to refine myself. Again, that's the Rabbanan already, but staying far away from the basar and chalav, mixing them together, that's going to affect my midos adversely. And I need to realize that the entire purpose of my life, the entire purpose of the Torah, is to make me into a more special, more refined person. And yeah, these practices, eating these non-kosher animals, eating milk and meat together, that's going to hurt me. And in a certain sense, it would be ironic for a person to be very, very, it would be ironic for a person to be extremely makbid in Hilchos Kashrus, but not really care about his midos. Like the whole purpose of what we're saying here, right? The whole purpose of the kashrus is to make sure your midos are extremely refined. So if a person who's super makbid on kashrus, I'm not saying you shouldn't be, but to be super makbid on kashrus and like your midos are a mess, like your mom is like totally missing the boat. You completely missed the boat, right? You're super makbid on every heksher, chas v'shalom, I would never, but like you're a mess in your midos, like you're totally missing the point. What about chametz on Pesach? What's pshat with chametz on Pesach? And I think to highlight the question with chametz on Pesach, I think the following. In other words, we put chametz and matzah together into sort of one thing. Eat matzah, don't eat chametz. But you could have imagined the world. You could have imagined the Torah. I think fairly easily where there would have been a mitzvah to eat matzah, but you could also eat chametz. Right? The mitzvah to eat matzah is easy to understand. We ate matzah when we left Mitzrayim. Leil Tesvav Nisan. We ran out of Mitzrayim. No time. We ate matzah. No problem. So on Leil Tesvav Nisan every year to commemorate the Geula, to commemorate the rushing out of Mitzrayim, eat matzah. What would be so bad if we also had chametz at the meal? Well, what's wrong? There could have been a mitzvah to eat matzah. You can also have chametz, because untahai. Why the craziness about the chametz? Why the isser of chametz? Why do you need that? And not only that chametz is asr, right? The isser of chametz is unique in the Torah. It's unique, right? Not only you can't eat chametz, you can't own chametz. We don't have that by pig. We don't have that by basr b'chalav. You can't even own chametz for the week of Pesach. And if you eat chametz on Pesach, you're chayiv kares. We don't have that by other isurei achila. Okay, chaylev, the isur of chaylev is an isur kares. But generally speaking, isurei achila, right, to have a chiv kares, well, what's the big deal with the chametz? And Chazal come along and say that chametz is osir b'kol shehu, right, as opposed to other isurim, if isur gets mixed into your tafshil, into your pot, into your soup, as long as you have 60 against it, you're fine, you're good. But chametz osir b'kol shehu, right, chametz gets into your mixture, even the smallest amount of chametz, everything is osir. Right, ad kedei kaf, there are people in Eretz Yisrael, I'm not saying you should try this at home, but there are people in Eretz Yisrael who will not use water on Pesach because they're nervous there could be crumbs in the Kinneret and therefore chametz osir b'kol shehu, and they take all their water before Pesach. Before Pesach, chametz is batel. Ad kedei kach. I'm not saying you should try that at home, but ad kedei kach, chametz osir b'kol shehu. Ad kedei kach. What's the craziness with the chametz? What's going on? Right? Stam. In our approach to Torah in general, we should always be trying. When you see that the Torah is there are laws in the Torah, dinim in the Torah, and they have particularly chamor consequences. That's Hashem's way of saying this is really important. This is really important. So it behooves us to try to understand what's this craziness with the chametz. Eat matzah, fine. You could also have chametz. What's the big deal with the chametz? Why can't you eat chametz on Pesach? Ad kedei kach. All these crazy chumras are associated with it. What are we supposed to be thinking about when we're cleaning for Pesach? What are we supposed to be thinking about over the course of Pesach, where there's so little that you can eat? You go on these trips and you're having matzah and cream cheese and chocolate bars. There's nothing to eat, right? What are you supposed to think? What are you supposed to be thinking? Are we supposed to be thinking over the course of Pesach? So maybe part of it is the following idea. I think this is a powerful idea to try to connect to. In Parshas Vayikra, the Torah asks putting se'ur on the Mizbeach. Se'ur means leaven, things that are able to be machmitz, a form of chametz, machmitz, other things. The Sefer Achinuch writes over there in Parshas Vayikra that chametz symbolizes arrogance. He says that, you know, chametz, the dough, when you mix together the flour and the water, the dough swells and gets bigger, even though really there's nothing added, right? It fills up basically with air, right? Chametz gets filled up with air. It looks elevated. It looks very significant. But the ma'aseh, it's just the same flour and water that you started with. Nothing really changed. It just puffs itself up with nothingness, right? Chametz, the Rishonim talk about, is meant to represent gaiva. The Baal Gaiva also is machshiv himself, thinks he's so important. There's really nothing going on inside. There's a lot of air, right? He puffs himself up, thinks he's so chashuv. And the Sefer Achinuch writes, the Pasuk says, Tovas Hashem kol gvalev, that someone who's has Gaiva, who's high in his heart, who thinks he's better than other people, a Baal Gaiva is Tovas Hashem. It's an abomination in front of Hashem. And so to serve Hashem with Gaiva, that would be terrible. The Torah asr is putting chametz on the Mizbeach to show how repugnant arrogance is in Hashem's eyes. It can't be you're putting anything on the Mizbeach that symbolizes gaiva. Okay, how does that relate? How does that relate to Yetzias Mitzrayim? So perhaps like this, right? We know that the entire purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim was to come to Har Sinai, get the Torah, and start the process of becoming bigger people. Right? As soon as we leave Mitzrayim, we start Sfiras HaOmer, we immediately start counting towards Matan Torah, to Har Sinai. That's the purpose of everything. The purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim was to receive the Torah and to start the process of working on ourselves and becoming much bigger people. That's the purpose of everything. Now, gaiva, arrogance, whatever, is in a certain sense, maybe, the most all-encompassing negative midah. Why do I mean by that? A person who's arrogant, arrogance in a general sense, you could think of, let me say it this way first. If you have like, we have like in Shabbos, we have ovos and toldos, and when it comes to Bava Kama, also there are ovos and toldos. Arrogance is like an av. It's like an av of the bad midos. A person who's arrogant, there is a lot of toldos of that. That is to say, a person who's arrogant has a very hard time being sensitive to other people, being sympathetic, being empathetic for other people. It's all about him. He only focuses on himself, right? A person who's arrogant will have a very hard time being a Baal Chesed, being sensitive, caring. He's always focused on him. A person who's arrogant will be extremely jealous of other people because it bothers him tremendously that other people have stuff that he doesn't have and they have a certain thing that could constitute a status symbol. He's extremely jealous. An arrogant person gets angry much more easily than other people because affronts to him, he right, registers so significantly. All right, doesn't everybody realize how chashuv he is? How could the person not respond to my phone call? How could he talk to me like that? Right, an arrogant person is much more likely to get angry. And the Baal HaMusar talk about the fact that arrogance lies behind many of the bad midos that manifest themselves in different kinds of ways. Lack of sensitivity, jealousy, anger, right? All of those, and failure to focus on the needs of other people, provide for the needs of other people. It all stems from arrogance, right? So that the Torah recognizes, Hashem recognizes that arrogance in a very serious sense tends to distort, you know, the way we look at the world. It tends to distort the way we focus on other things. You know, Baalei Gaiva end up focusing tremendously, tremendous amounts of time, tremendous amounts of energy, right? On the image they're projecting towards other people. You know, they have to make sure they dress the right way, they have the right house, they vacation in the right places. Everything has to be a certain way so they can present a certain image to the outer world. And you're spending so much time, so much energy, so much money on making sure that your image is a certain way. By definition, you don't have the wherewithal to focus on internal things, right? Like we saw in Al Eshur at the beginning, right? The idea that the most basic thing is before you can start working on any of your midos, the first sentence that he introduced the entire section with was that someone who wants to come to work on himself has to build this internal world. It needs to be that you have a well-developed and a tremendous focus on that internal place. A Baal Gaiva is the opposite of that. A Baal Gaiva, everything is about externality. Everything is about focusing on the way you look, the way you appear, your image to other people. You know, Baalei Gaiva think that they're building themselves up. They think that they're almighty and strong as a result of the image they're able to project. The truth is that the more of a Baal Gaiva that someone is, the more vulnerable they are. Because any shift in public opinion, any time that someone says something that's not exactly to their liking, or they feel like they're choshesh that this person doesn't like them, or this person has a negative image of them, they're a mess. Right? A Baal Gaiva is made vulnerable by his Gaiva. It makes him vulnerable, and then again, ends up, he has to focus a tremendous amount of energy on maintaining his equilibrium because he's so subject to the whims of other people and the way they view him and the way they perceive him. And if it's true that the purpose of the Torah is litzaref, to purify, to make us into bigger, more refined people, Gaiva would be a tremendous obstacle to overcome in doing so. So the Torah over here on Pesach, this week that commemorates Yitzias Mitzrayim, right? The first day of Pesach was the Yitzia from Mitzrayim. The seventh day of Pesach is Kriyas Yamsuf. Hashem decided there's going to be a week that commemorates the Geula from the time that we left until the drowning of the Egyptians in the sea. And you have all this Chol HaMoed in the middle. For that week that commemorates the Exodus from Mitzrayim, Chas V'Shalom to get close to Chametz. Chas V'Shalom to get close to anything that represents Gaiva. Gaiva is the exact opposite of the reason I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim. The reason I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim is to work on your midos, to become a bigger person. You're going towards Har Sinai now. All of the mitzvos, the aseis, the lota aseis, all of them are trying to make you into a bigger person, a more refined person, a more delicate, sensitive, caring individual. One way I'm going to try to hammer that message home is to tell you, for these 7 days that we're commemorating Yitzias Mitzrayim, you're not allowed to get anywhere near chametz. You can't eat it, you can't own it. Chazal came along and asked the kolshu. A kolshu gets into your drink. Throw everything out. Chas v'shalom, anything to do with chametz over the course of Pesach. And that's supposed to drill home this message that the purpose of the geula is refinement of midos. Any element of gaiva, chas v'shalom, have any contact with that over this week, over the week of Pesach. And Stam, I think, you know, when we Pesach, I've heard, Pesach can be overwhelming. Pesach can be overwhelming. The Isser of Chametz can be overwhelming. Cleaning your houses can be overwhelming. And when a person relates to it that way, it's just overwhelming and such a pain in the neck. I've heard people say that over the years for sure. People who wear black and white, that they can't believe Pesach. It's such a pain. It's such a drag. It's so difficult getting ready for Pesach. So I'm not coming to contest that getting ready for Pesach, cleaning a house for Pesach, is a difficult thing. It's very difficult. It requires a tremendous amount of energy. But how do you relate to it? If you relate to it as just this burdensome thing, gosh, why does Hashem have to be so crazy about the chametz? It's ridiculous. It's so hard. I'm breaking my back and staying all cleaning all the rooms, crazy with the kids that they can't run around with the snacks once we clean the rooms. All the craziness that's eating in the stairwell for a few days before Pesach, right? All of these things that really are objectively difficult. They're difficult, right? The stairwell does not look kishmak in Eretz Yisrael two or three days before Pesach. You don't want to be there. Don't come over two or three days before Pesach, right? You don't want to be there, right? But how do you relate to that, right? How do you relate to it? So if it's just this extremely annoying thing that happens 3 or 4 days, you know, before, or whatever, 7 days. And people are cleaning for Pesach already. My daughter told me that yesterday a girl came into school at 12:15. Okay, school's over at 1 o'clock. She came in at, I don't know why she came. She came in at 12:15, gave her teacher a note. She was helping her mother clean for Pesach for 3 hours. And the teacher said, Kol HaKavod. Kol HaKavod. It's Chav Zayin Adar. Right? It's 18 days till Pesach. 18 days till Pesach. Right? So I'm saying it's a craziness. There's a craziness before Pesach, a craziness. But how do you relate to it? If you relate to it as just a craziness, what a pain in the neck. I wish it wasn't here. You know, forget this whole thing. So then you're completely missing the boat. If you think about the fact that when Hashem generates craziness, He's doing it for a reason. Hashem knew it would be crazy. He knows that. He knew it would be crazy. Why is He doing that? So we have to try to connect to the reasons behind the things that we're doing. If it's true that when you're cleaning the house for Pesach, if it's true that you're deciding to be extra careful about this hechsher for Pesach, this issue for Pesach, you're connecting to the deeper ideas behind it. Gosh, this is about refining myself, staying clearly as far as possible away from any element of gaiva. Not just I can't ingest, and I can't even own chametz on Pesach. I can't be anywhere near it. This is about Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's about the beginning of the purification process, and that needs to be completely pure. It's a whole different Pesach. It's a whole different way of approaching things. As you're scrubbing, as you're looking, as you're being careful, as you're eating your potato chips, you know, for the seventh time on Chol HaMoed, and you know, there's nothing else to eat. Right, trying to connect just for a second. What is this all about? What am I doing? Right, I think that by the Lo Ta'aseis, especially a Lo Ta'aseis that comments on Pesach, which is objectively very burdensome, and we grow up with it from a very young age. I think we fail to try to connect to the deeper meaning behind it. So, Stam making suggesting that all of us together try our best to try to connect to, again, when you're staying away from non-kosher food in general, when you're staying away from basur b'chalav, when you're waiting the 6 hours, whatever your minhag is between meat and milk, and when you're not eating chametz on Pesach, and making sure you don't own chametz on Pesach, going to the Rav to sell your chametz, that's the easiest part. That's easy, right? But cleaning the house and staying away from the improper hechsherim and all of the burdens, you know, that the Isser chametz imposes, not to relate to them that way, or at least to, in addition to the burden, at least to relate also to the more loftier goals that Hashem has in mind in legislating against chametz for the week of Pesach. Everybody should, we should do our best to connect to these ideas in general, and chametz on Pesach in particular, and Chag Kasher B'Sameach.